I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody. Listen, we have a very special guest. Milo Ventimiglia is going to join us, my good buddy, for over 20 years. He's one of the most decorated and well-deserving of those awards and nominations actors working in the business today. He's a personal friend of mine. He's a terrific, terrific guy, terrific actor. He's also done some of the most interesting work. Right now, he's Jack Pearson on This Is Us, the smash hit on NBC. But he's also doing a podcast called Strawberry Spring, which is on iHeart. It's a Stephen King kind of a murder mystery. He's doing it with Garrett Hudlund and Sydney Sweeney, the wonderful Sydney Sweeney, and others. And so he's doing that podcast, and I think they've done a couple of episodes, eight episodes or something, and they're in the can, and they're downloadable on Wednesdays on iHeart. But we're going to talk to Milo, and I'm very excited. Any chance to spend some time with Milo is time well spent, and so we're going to talk to Milo, and after these messages. Mr. Milo, there he is.
What's up, brother? How you doing,
What's
man?
What's up? How you doing, guy?
I'm great, dude. It's great to see your face, guy.
Great to see you. You must be so busy. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Absolutely, man.
Appreciate it. Really, really appreciate
it. How you doing? What's going on?
You know, we sold the house. We moved closer to the beach, and Nick's back in school, and you know, we're just living our lives.
That's good,
man.
Dude. Yeah, that's great. That's
anything
great,
happen
man.
In your life lately? taking over the entertainment business?
one or two things. Now, you know me. I'm married to work. Things are well. You know, plugging away sixth season of the show.
Good.
Did a little traveling over the break on the hiatus. Decided not to work and try and spend some time with people. You know what I found was there were a lot of people, of course, coming out of what last year was, that I think needed to be reminded that the world will open back up, things will level, things will right. And I kind of took it upon myself to just travel around and see a few friends as best I could, as safely as I could, knowing that maybe they needed to see someone outside of their immediate world. So that's what I did. And now I'm back in the grind of Los Angeles work, traffic, all the like wearing makeup, things like that.
Yeah, man, you're keeping it real. I see on your socials. Yeah, you'll go out and you'll travel around and you'll go great distances. I mean, you'll just drive. You'll visit the Grand Canyon. You'll take that. What do you take an Airstream with you and just go?
Yeah. Last year I picked up my first Airstream and realized it wasn't quite as big as what I'd like to have. So I sold that, got a second one that was bigger.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, you know me, it's like, I think as long as we've known each other, it's like we've always just talked about being like kind of out in the world and me being out in the world. And, you know, once the kind of globe slowed down and we had to reassess what getting out of our own houses meant, I found a lot of comfort taking a trailer, taking an Airstream and actually like getting around and seeing what's next door, seeing kind of my neighbors. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to take trips all the time. I mean, we'd go to Arizona, we'd go to Oregon, we'd go to Utah, we'd kind of just go to maybe as far as Colorado, but we take these family trips and I just really enjoy it. I definitely enjoy it. So, and yeah, and then eventually I post. Like, I think I haven't posted anything on social media and probably like, well, on Instagram in particular, probably in like 5 or 6 months, which means I've probably got, I don't know, maybe like 100 photos ready to go up or something like that for the last 6 months.
People will stop what they're doing and check it out for sure. But yeah, what a wonderful thing it is to travel, just to get out there. And especially in this business, when it's so And, you know, I know how it is too. It can get a little taxing on your system and you need to just go recharge and you need, so I get out and, you know, my big thing is skiing and
Man,
even before I got the show, I'd throw stuff in my truck and drive to Utah. I'd be a snowstorm chaser and go chase the powder and just do that for the winter as I could. Can't do it anymore because you have a family, but still we get out there. But yeah, the need to get out there and travel is it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, no, now you just bring roommates. Exactly. That's how it is. You just bring your roommates, you know? It's funny. It's like when you're talking about like recharging, you know, you and I always worked the same. I remember being on set and so many moments, like just having to like workshop those lines and workshop those scenes. And, you know, I was always grateful to do that with you because that's also your process. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that just gets, you get so focused on it. That's really the only thing you're thinking about. And you never understand, or I would never understand, that I would just be kind of drawing from the well. I'd be pulling and pulling and pulling and like using all that kind of emotional currency or spiritual currency, or just kind of, you know, what we have to do as artists, mm-hmm. using that. That at a certain point, you really need to fill that back up. And for me, it's always people that I'm close to, you know, having a friend that I know I'm going to know for the rest of my life and being able to spend time that doesn't feel like it's work, mm-hmm. you know, and travel. Mm-hmm. And also, yeah, seeing different sites and all that, and seeing familiar sites too. So,
right.
Yeah. Just refilling that well.
It is a very demanding, I mean, anything is, but I mean, acting is a very demanding job.
Yeah,
because it's not just what you're doing. It's not what you're doing in front of the camera. It's how you're interacting with everybody else on the set. And you do that.
Big time.
You do that particularly well, because I think it's just, you're sort of a naturally outgoing, friendly person.
Naturally outgoing introvert.
No, there is an introvert in you. There is a side of you that's very introverted, but it doesn't make you. You know, it doesn't make you block off the world or block off people. I mean, you're still open to people while you're working. So I was always very impressed by that fact. How did we meet? Well, do you remember the first time we met?
Oh man, I don't remember the first moment. I think I very much just remember that first day of filming.
Right.
And that first day of filming is when Luke and Jess were at odds. He was kind of forced to have to go to school. And we were doing that big walk and talk right before you pushed me in the lake.
That was the first thing we did together?
I think it was. Or, no. You know what it was? No, I think the first thing we did together was getting off the bus. I think we actually, they gave us moment one, which was a simple scene. Barely anything spoken. But I think that was like the first like real working moment. I think we met each other in passing when I got the job. Because wait, did we do table reads?
Yes, we did early on. We did for a couple of seasons, yeah.
Then I think we probably met maybe at a table read or shortly before. I really can't remember. Right. What I remember is just diving right in. Mm-hmm. Like no pleasantries, no bullshit. Just literally just be like, oh, hey, this is Scott, this is mine. Like, this is how we're going to fight. This is how we're going to work. You know? And two, what was always funny to me was, dude, you and I were always like really cool and engaged and like had a lot to talk about. But of course, we're playing these characters that, you know, Jess was, he was a punk kid who didn't want to hear it from anybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Luke was losing his mind with this kid that he got saddled with from his sister. And, you know, who you and I were could not have been more opposite than who Jess and Luke were. Mm-hmm. But also where Jess and Luke kind of got to, I think ultimately was closer to who you and I were in terms of like relationship and whatnot, you know, mm-hmm. cause I think, you know, Jess grew up, Jess learned some lessons and Luke had been through some stuff and I don't know. It's all fascinating.
I remember shooting that, the lake push scene. I remember the walk and talk was like 30. We did like 30 takes, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. But the lake push was one.
One take. Yeah.
That was the first one. Yeah. And then we did get a safety. just in case.
We did it twice?
I think we did it twice. Yeah. Because I remember I had to change. I had three different changes. Brenda Maben was there.
Right.
I had a blanket to like put around me just to change really quick on the go instead of going all the way back to our trailers on the other side of the Last Samurai set.
That's right.
You know?
That's
right.
It
was like, yeah. Yeah.
Tom Cruise was over there. That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. There were so many things that would come through that lot. It was so fun to watch too.
I know.
And like I remember being on that lot and seeing like George Clooney mm-hmm. and Anthony Edwards playing basketball. And then you knew Tom Cruise was shooting a movie. And then you'd walk past the Friends set to get from our stages and trailers to get to the back lot where the gazebo was. And you just like see them and see the cars and you talk to the security guys, Ramos, because you see these people every day. So you just start talking to them, you know their names and everything. And I mean, what a magical time. And then thinking to myself as a young actor, wow, I've got a spot. I've got a concrete slab that has my name on it mm-hmm. on the Warner Brothers film studio lot.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm 24 years old. Yeah. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, that was cool. Hey, it was cool for me too. I was in my early 40s and it was like,
yeah.
I've got a parking spot over here with my name on
yeah.
it. That was awesome.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I remember when they were doing Ocean's 11 mm-hmm. or 12 or 13, whichever one it was. And they were right across the street from it's like Brad Pitt and Clooney pulled up on their motorcycles and then Al Pacino got dropped off his trailer. Mm-hmm. Al Pacino's trailer was catty corner from my trailer. And I went over there. I actually went over there and tried to meet him.
Yeah.
And the PA was like,
how'd it go?
Not well. It did not go well. It didn't go well. She looked at me like, get out of here, you jerk. What are you doing? You're not going to meet him. He's in his trailer. Go away. And I'm like, come on. I just want to like, you know, I got to meet the guy.
You're like, but that's my trailer.
I'm not some crazy guy on the lot. I'm just, you know, that's my trailer over there. I'm doing a TV series. I just want to meet the guy. She goes, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to call security. Get out.
Oh man. It's so funny. He's such a lovely man. Such a warm guy. I did a bunch of table reads on this script that he really wanted to do about Salvador Dali. And I remember I did one and it was Al and Kelsey Grammer and Rita Wilson and a handful of Selma Blair was there and just a handful of actors. And we just kind of read this script and workshopped it. And, you know, you just kind of do that. Then you forget about it. And then like a month later, they're like, hey, Milo, Al wants you to do it again. And I go, okay. And then like 2 months later, hey, Al wants to bring you in to do this again. I'm like, wait, why is Al calling me? And really? That's crazy. But just like, he's just one of those guys that dives completely into his art and his work. Mm-hmm. And I remember like I got invited to his house to watch Salome. He'd done a recorded version, a filmed version of a stage play starring Jessica Chastain before she became Jessica Chastain.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember everybody just like, whoa, who is this girl, who is this woman? She is amazing,
right?
And it was just but also at the same time, you know, like kind of as a fanboy, you're sitting there, I'm sitting at Al Pacino's house watching something that he filmed and he's asking me my opinion. Wow, this is crazy.
Remember the motorcycle I used to have with the Vance and Hines short shots? It was really loud.
Oh yeah.
I pull up to a little theater parking lot to turn around in West Hollywood and I almost ran over Al Pacino.
No
in
way.
That parking lot.
Was there a PA to tell you not to talk
to him?
No.
He was by himself. He was getting out of his SUV and he was going into the theater. You know that little old Globe Theater they have in West Hollywood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was there. And I roar up and he gives me this like, whoa, whoa, because it was really loud. And I came in and I didn't see him. And I didn't really, but that's when I got to meet him. And I got off my motorcycle and I said, you have no idea how much I wanted to meet you. You were over at the Warner Brothers lot and I was filming a show. And I just wanted to say you were one of my big inspirations. And he was really cool with me. He was just like, oh my God. He goes, your motorcycle's really loud. I said, well, that's to keep me alive, you know, so.
Yeah, I know for how grand he is, for how grand his performances are.
Yeah.
he's an artist just like you or I.
Yeah, he is.
He really truly is. And he champions actors. He really, really does. Yes. It's a pretty wonderful thing. It's good reminder for being on the other end of things when there is that younger actor or someone who's maybe not quite in the position you're in, like to notice the talent, to champion the talent, to give them real honest ideas so mm-hmm. that they can grow in their careers.
Mm-hmm. I could talk to you all day.
All day, Scott.
There's a lot of fan questions. I have to ask you a couple of fan questions if you sure. don't mind. Okay.
Yeah, no, man, go for it.
Okay.
Yeah,
of course. All right, let's see. Jessica, maybe it's Jessica Chastain, wants to know. Jessica from, she's from Portland, wants to know, looking back, what do you think about Jess and Rory's relationship?
It's been a while since I've thought about Jess and Rory's relationship. I know people always ask me questions about it, but I think, you know, things are complicated when you're young. I think we can all understand this. I think we can all appreciate it. You know, you're going through a developmental change. You are seeing things in the world that you've never seen before. You're experiencing things like from the heart, from the gut, from the head that you're experiencing for the first time. You know, so I think Jess and Rory, I think they were what they needed at the moment from each other. And at the same time, you know, it didn't work out. They went in different directions, and that's okay too. That's kind of great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I did always appreciate about the two of them was, you know, they, outside of what anybody wanted to put onto those two, they kind of made their own world. And I think that's pretty cool. I think when there's always going to be outside influence and tell you how to behave, what to read, what to do, what to look for. What are the pitfalls? What are the glories? Hey, this is what I did when I was your age. But really, that's just people giving you their version of what they think your life should be. So I think Jess and Rory like really kind of found their own world and created their own world. And it lasted beyond just them romantically as teenagers to where they had an actual friendship as they became young adults.
Mm-hmm. Would you do it again if they wanted to do some more episodes? A year in the life part two?
Sure. I mean, the thing is this, is like, I can't ever get away from it. You know, it's for me, knowing that like you and Lauren and Alexis and probably just about everybody else in the show would show up. And on top of it, it'd probably be Dan and Amy there riding their asses off. It's like, yeah, why wouldn't I? If it would feel like it's there for the right reason versus the wrong reason. Like, and we all know those wrong reasons where shows think that the show is bigger than the characters, so they'll try and bring it back just to get more money. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, but are there really more stories to tell? That's where I always kind of go back to the nostalgia of the past, of stories that we were a part of, is, are there still more stories to tell? Have these characters grown to a point where we actually really want to see more of them? We want to understand where they've been. We're going to discover something new. So I think if they did want to bring it back, and if it was Amy and Dan at the helm and you guys were all showing up, I'd be a jerk to not show up.
You just made a lot of people very happy. Not that you don't anyway, but when they hear that, they're going to be very happy.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I mean, listen, everybody, you know, the way that I look at it was the four films that were put together after the fact. That felt like the extra slice of cake after you'd already had cake.
Right.
You had that favorite meal, you had the cake, and then you got something even extra. Like, I don't know if they would bring it back. Or in the form that maybe people would want, because I'm also big on, hey, we're artists and we're actors and we evolve and we grow. And yes, we play these parts and they may be iconic and they may be evergreen, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I look forward to playing a lot of different men over the course of my career.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the sledgehammer scene. My absolute favorite scene.
There, you got a room. Yeah.
You know, because of the fact that I was talking so much, and it was just nice to do an action. It was nice to do some physical acting, some, and just a clever little quick scene. And the pressure was on, and we'd already proven that we can operate well under pressure with the lake thing. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of that scene?
Oh man, again, that was years ago, but I do remember it. I remember, yeah, there was a whole bunch of gaff and gaw going on beforehand that ultimately, you know, came to the moment where you start hitting the wall. And I think just kind of not really understanding what's going on. And then they go, there, you got your room. I think that was the line there. It's like, there, you have your room, or mm-hmm. you have your space, or whatever. And listen, we had a lot of work. I'd have to go back and watch two seasons from 20 years ago to like really, truly understand.
You know, I just saw the scene because I hadn't seen A Year in the Life. I went to the premiere. You weren't there, which was a great disappointment. But I'm sure you were busy and you were filming something. But the premiere was this overwhelming fan celebration. So many people showed up in Westwood. It was craziness. But I want, you know, they played Winter there. And I thought, boy, this is really well done. They felt like little rom-coms. They felt like really high quality independent films. It didn't seem like television anymore. It seemed like it had graduated into something, you know, it morphed into sort of the film world. But I didn't watch the other three episodes. I just don't like, I don't like watching myself. I spent so much time with the show that I didn't watch it. And then I finally saw the scene with the flower and you and me, and Lorelei had gone to California to do her wilding. And I was so touched by that scene. I was so moved by that scene because your character had come full circle and now you were the one taking care of me.
Yeah.
And I actually teared up a little bit because I missed you so much and I know you're such a good guy. And what a perfect moment that was for me. In all of those four episodes, that was my favorite moment. That scene was my favorite moment. Anyway, that's all I'll say about that. Let's get into your podcast. You have a podcast. You're doing a podcast with Stephen King.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. That's fascinating.
I got approached just like an acting job. You know, I listened to podcasts and been in podcasts, and I'm in the process of putting up a couple of my own in the scripted world, which hopefully I can talk about soon. But this, I got approached, and, you know, I'd always grown up with Stephen King novels. And once I had a little bit of bravery to read some and understand the writing and find my favorites and all of that, I was a fan like anybody else. So when the opportunity came up to be a part of this, I was familiar with the short story, but I hadn't read it. I know it was only 11 pages, but what I did read were the first three episodes that were written by Lee Metzger. And I just thought, this writing is phenomenal. It 1000% captures the essence of a Stephen King story, and I'd like to do it. So, you know, just like a normal job, you line up, you meet people, although you're not going in for fittings, you're not going in for hair and makeup tests. You're just, they're understanding what you're going to do with your voice and how it's going to go. So, and these murders happen in one section of time, and then we jump forward and they're happening again. So you start to understand there's a serial killer, and there is an investigative journalist that starts at the school paper, but also kind of graduates beyond that, who's investigating these. And that's played by Garrett Hedlund. There's a gal that works the newspaper, played by Sydney Sweeney. And I play Garrett's friend, who's also a radio DJ at the time. And we're all just trying to make sense and understand what these killings are about and who's doing it, and trying to like just really figure it out. And in true Stephen King fashion, it's dark and it's scary and it's real, and you kind of are haunted by it. And, you know, you're really thinking about those things that kind of lurk under the bed or outside your window at night.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Steve,
fantastic. What an interesting project. Yeah. Stephen King, he's all about, you know, New Hampshire, Vermont, you know, the woods,
yep.
Cold.
Maine, all that. Yeah. Fog.
Fog rolling in every 8 years, yeah, you know, yeah. My God. Yeah. That's great. You're making those episodes now, and they're downloadable now.
They're already made. Right. It took me not a lot of time to shoot all eight of my episodes. Okay. They're out on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. New episodes come out every Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So I think there's 3 episodes now. We got 5 more on top of that. The story really builds. I think it's great. I mean, you know, as a kid, I used to listen to these radio plays when I'd go on road trips with my dad, like I said, and it's just, this is exactly that. Mm-hmm. This is exactly
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. All right. I wasn't even aware of that. And then the producers told me that you had a podcast. I was fascinated. Here's a question. Here's another fan question.
Yeah.
You've played a couple of different iconic roles mm-hmm. in your career so far, many more to come. Who do you think is, what do you think, Jack Pearson versus Jess? Mm-hmm. Who did you have more fun playing? Or are you enjoying Jack Pearson as much as you played Jess?
I enjoy Jack Pearson as much as I enjoyed playing Jess. I mean, you know, for me, and I know we've talked about this in terms of like acting and whatnot, but I really put myself into a character wholly, like, you know, wholly, like just the whole thing. I immersed myself in it to the point where I can take that character off like a costume and leave them on set and step away and just be myself. Or when cut is called, I get to step away and be myself. So when I was 24, 25, 26, and I was playing Jess, I was completely invested. As I'm in my 40s now, playing Jack, I'm completely invested in Jack. And 6 years deep, the nice thing about a guy like Jack and what I was able to experience with Jess as well was knowing these men so deeply and so intimately that I was acting on instinct. All I had to do was truly learn my lines, show up, look my co-star in the eye, and then there's the character. You know, I mean, hair and the makeup, the wardrobe, you know, of course, kind of like puts you into that mode of the character, but it's all acting on instinct. So I enjoy it. I really do. I'm sure, you know, these aren't the two defining characters I'll have, just mm-hmm. like Peter Petrelli wasn't in addition. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of men, complex and incredibly simple, that I would love to play, that I'd love to kind of tell the stories of.
Who are they? Who do you want to play? Who are you really itching to play?
I mean, I tell you what, last year I was lined up to play Evel Knievel.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, we got shut down. I mean, I was fully transformed over. At some point I'll show you the photos, the portraits we took, because whoa, people thought, they were like, oh yeah, you're gonna look just like him. I'm like, no, that's me, that's not him, that's me, that's not him. I'd like to get back to that project and play Evel Knievel. That was he's an icon and he's an American legend. He was also not an amazing husband and not an amazing father in ways, right. And really had a tough outlook on the people that were supporting him and that he just didn't treat well. Right. So he was a complex character, a very complex man that I would like to get back to that. And the stories we had lined up for the 6 episodes we were going to do, I mean, wow, what a journey.
You know, I grew up with him. I grew up with that guy. I mean, he was part of the entertainment of my youth.
Yeah.
It seemed like every month or every couple of months, Evel Knievel was going to set another record jumping his motorcycle mm-hmm. over, you know, now 30 buses or 40 buses mm-hmm. or something in the Houston Astrodome or wherever. And he always fell and he always broke dozens of bones in his legs, his hips, he was always in surgery. He was always
but you know what he always did and what his biggest message was?
What?
You get back up. You get back up. No matter what, you're going to fall, but you're always going to get back up. And I think that was what people identified with. Yes, people would watch him to see the crash, but also that triumphant get back up, even in the most pain. Like when he crashed at Wembley, I think he'd made an announcement saying, "This is the last time I'm ever going to jump." I mean, that dude was really broken once that happened.
Right.
Really broken. Right. But he had to, as a point, get up and walk out of that stadium, even though he had help, but he had to do it. Oh. He could not do it.
It was a
big inspiration to kids. You know, it was a big message of his, you know, I mean, he did a lot of other bad shit, but he got back up.
It was staggering to watch a man put himself through that.
Yeah,
and you're a little kid, you're watching this guy, and they're showing it in slow motion. The thing I remember most about Evel Knievel is his attempt to jump the Grand Canyon in that rocket car. And then the slow motion replays on ABC's Wide World of Sports of him crashing and his bones. You could see his bones breaking on the concrete when he landed. I mean, it was just like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah.
So that project is still has life. You can go back. You're going to go back and do that.
Maybe. Yeah. We're trying to figure that out. I mean, you know, we got shut down because of COVID,
right.
Where the whole world just stopped. And then ultimately I personally ran out of time to be able to go film that because it was 6 episodes. It was a pretty big, ambitious project and we were also producing it. So, you know, we knew that we could step away from it and hopefully go back to it. So I think right now there's conversations about bringing that back next spring. Once I wrap This Is Us, you know, go blonde again, put my fake hairy chest on and get back into the white leathers. But yeah, I'm sure. I mean, you know, when you spend 6 years on a show too, you know this. It's like when it's done, you're kind of ready to take a break, but you're also piqued to know what else is out there. You know, what other opportunities can I jump on? What other characters can I play? Because as an artist, you know, I always want to challenge myself and I want to grow and I want to play things that aren't the same as what I've been doing. Like, you know, I don't need to play another Jack Pearson father, even though people see me in that light right now, because, well, I've done it for 6 years. Maybe I need to do something different. Like Evel Knievel was the complete opposite.
Because they're going to come after you for every Jack Pearson role there
is. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course.
They're going to want you to play that for the rest of your life. Yeah.
Sure. And I could probably make a nice living and a nice career at that, but it also, it's like, I wouldn't be satisfying for me. I'd rather just, you know, I don't know, learn how to go like shape knives in Japan for the rest of my life. If that was the case. I don't know.
Right. Exactly. I mean,
yeah.
Keep learning, keep changing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why do you think, here's another fan question. This is from Maggie from, Moosehead Lake. Why do you think Gilmore is so special and has stood the test of time?
I think it's a bit of wish fulfillment. And I think it's got a magical quality to it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think it shows on an emotional level experiences that we all go through. As simple as that, you know, it's wish fulfillment. Everybody wants to live in the small town with the gazebo. That's the wish part. The emotional side, we all experience, you know, love, we all experience heartbreak, we all experience coming across some zany characters in our worlds, but at the same time, all we're looking for is companionship and happiness and love and hopefully support.
Right.
I think that's a big thing, and you know, I think Gilmore had a lot of that. It had a lot of supportful, like not supporting, but there were a lot of characters that were, I'll say it, supporting others, you know, in an emotional way.
A lot of love there.
A lot of love.
Okay, here we have Jennifer from Dallas. What was your favorite? Okay, here's a Jess question. What was your favorite part of Jess, and what was your least favorite part of Jess?
I think they might have been one and the same. His confidence. Because I think he had a lot of confidence and he also had a lot of insecurities and he kind of had to find his way back to that center, back to that middle. And it made him complex. It made him have to discover these sides of his existence that were constantly battling inside of him. You know, the exposure to the vulnerability, but yet the bravado of, no, I know exactly the answer to these 20 questions because I'm kind of a kid genius and I read. Those are my favorite sides of Jess. I really liked that. And I liked when he would allow that vulnerability to happen and he was rewarded for it. You know, kind of like those breakthrough moments with Luke or the breakthrough moments with his father that we only got a glimpse of, or those breakthrough moments with Rory that we understood were happening. I think those moments were wonderful because it happens in life. We all do that. We put ourselves out there. We may speak honestly, but yet with the idea that maybe somebody's not going to respond well, but the fear is just us projecting what we think may happen versus, well, having a good, honest conversation. And that just usually comes with being an adult,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I don't think they could have picked a better actor to play Jess. I don't think they could have picked a better actor to play Jack Pearson. I think when you have the experience of working with Milo, and I'm talking to my audience directly, it's working at in an elevated place. When you would come on the set and we would do our work, there was something very, very calming working with you. And I miss it. And I miss you. And I love you, brother.
Yeah, me too, man.
And
me too, bud.
I'm so happy for all of your success and please continued success. I think you're just scratching the surface of where you're going to go in this business.
I hope so. I mean, look, you know, if I'm just scratching the surface, hopefully I can just create other opportunities where guys like us can get back on a set, you know, mm-hmm. because I feel exactly the same way. I love the experience. Whenever I think about it, I always go back to like immediately standing outside of the diner, middle of the night, workshopping lines. And you're like, you know how you remember a long passage? I go, no, Scott, how do you remember a long passage? And you go, you say the sentence, but then you tack on the first word of the next sentence. And then you just string them all together. I never thought about that. Okay.
Yeah, that was my trick.
But dude, we would just work.
I forgot about that.
And work. But it was always exciting. And it was always fun. And it was like, oh, this is gonna be good. This is gonna be a good 45 takes. Let's do it.
Yeah. 40, because we'd have to do that many takes for sure.
Yeah, it was a lot. So,
all right, buddy, you have to please come back on.
I will. Absolutely.
We have so many things we can talk about other than Gilmore Girls. And
I know. I could be Andy to your Conan.
There we go, Val. All the best. And thanks for coming on. Thank you for your time.
Always, man. Always,
ladies,
Scott,
and gentlemen,
you, bro. Love you.
Love you, buddy. Milo Ventimiglia, have a great day. We'll talk
you
soon,
too,
buddy.
Man.
Okay.
We'll talk soon, man. Thanks,
right.
Scott. Bye.
All right, bye. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at IAmAllInPodcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.